Next Move Group, the voice of economic development.
Hello, my name is Chad Chancellor. I'm co-founder of Next Move Group. And in this video, we're going to talk about really the different components of a good economic development program, how to build a machine that runs like a machine, that runs well, between your elected officials, your economic development board, and your economic development staff people, where you have one economic developer or a whole department or a whole organization. What we have found is when those all run together like a machine, communities can have a whole lot of success. If one gets out of joint doing something they shouldn't be doing, not doing something they shouldn't be doing, getting over part of the other one, that's when it gets in trouble. So in this video, we're going to show you what all y'all ought to be doing, what each individual part should be doing in order to really maximize your chances of success. So let's start with talking a little bit about our company and really what gives us this expertise. So we started this company in 2014 and really designed it to help small to mid-sized communities and small to mid-sized companies both have economic success. That's why we started this company. We've had over 400 clients since 2014, probably approaching 500 by now, if we count. As of right now, we have a team of 9 people scattered across the country. We have primary offices in New Orleans, St. Louis, and Greenville, South Carolina. And we have really a variety of different expertise. John Sisson is a member of something called the Site Selectors Guild, which is the top 40 site selectors in the world for manufacturing companies. So he knows how to find locations manufacturing companies should go to. Brandon Nettles and Brittany McCoy and our team have master's degrees in economic development. Gabby Mulies came out of TV media, so we got the marketing side of it. Allison Knapp came out of construction. Caroline Few does web work for us. And Eddie Spratz came out of many, many years in government doing business development type work. So we have represented, among the things we do executive searches for economic development type people. That's one of the things we do other ones. But what really gives us this expertise today to show you what your role is based on which of those three things you are, an elected official, an economic development board member, the economic developer, are the different types of searches we have done. So we have done searches for municipal clients where we help them hire an economic developer. Cities and counties, these would be department heads of economic development. We've done those things from Florida to West Fargo, North Dakota. We've done these for chambers of commerce. Sometimes economic development's within the chamber of commerce. So we've done those. We've done public-private partnerships where the economic development is a separate entity. It's a public-private partnerships. We've even done ports and airports. We've done public industrial development boards. So they don't have any private money, but they're a totally separate entity. My point to you is of our 500 clients, we've had every kind of client you can have when it comes to economic development. So our perspective that we're going to share with you today comes from learning from them. We have seen what works best and we've seen what doesn't work through all of these years. Every time we do a search, we obviously interview the local elected officials. We interview the stakeholders, the board members. We talk to the economic developers they're recruiting. We hear why the economic developers might turn the job down. So that's where all this perspective really comes from. So let's start with basics that all the stakeholders need to understand. In a minute, we're going to get into what should the board do, the economic development board. What should the elected officials do and what should the staff do? But there's some things that everybody needs to understand for the machine to be well-oiled or it's not going to work right. And the first thing is to really, I like to start with this slide and we're going to end with it. I'll give you a preview of the end. This is a talk I gave at the Community Development Institute. And it was a tweet that went around. A lot of people have commented on it. The best economic development teams that I have personally seen has your economic development staff member serve as the quarterback and the wide receivers and the skill positions, if you think about football team. Your elected officials and your board serve as the offensive line blocking for them. Now, offensive line, in my opinion, is more important, but they're not the ones that are always seen with the ball. You understand what I'm saying? I'm a New Orleans Saints fan. Right now, our offensive line's injured. We lose in every game. I don't know when you're watching this, but right now we've lost 5 in a row because our offensive line is injured. So it doesn't mean that they're less important. You need to let the economic developers be the one throwing the ball and catching the ball. You need to block for them. If they're not getting the job done, you make a change. We'll get into all of that later. When does this turn around? Well, this turns around when a company actually comes to town and the governor comes and you have a big ribbon cutting. When that happens, the economic developer needs to step back, put the board and the elected officials to the front, and let them take all the credit. Let them be the quarterback on that day, because that they have to go out and they have to defend them. So when they're running for office, people are saying, you need to get us some jobs in here. That's how you got to handle that. I have seen this gets mixed up if it gets turned around. So as we go through this, you'll start to see what I mean by all these different parts. Let's start with understanding, why does economic development matter? Everybody thinks economic development is jobs, jobs, jobs. It is not. The best way to understand why economic development matters is to reverse engineer it. That's the best way to understand. So the more healthy businesses you have, the more government revenue you got coming in, the more you're going to be able to pay for schools and fire and police and roads, so on and so forth. That's why this matters. It's not just a corporate handout. It's an investment. So what I like to do, I live in New Orleans. I like to share this story with you. This story ran in the New Orleans or the Baton Rouge paper, I can't remember, back in 2020, Shell Oil announced they were closing a refinery in St. James Parish. St. James is a small parish between New Orleans and Baton Rouge, so it's a rural type parish. I want you to read this. Because this refinery was closing, it is costing the parish, which is a county down here, that's what we call a county, $5 million in sales taxes and $19 million in property taxes. Look over here. The county is going to lose 20% of their annual revenue. 20% of their annual revenue gone. These schools are going to lose 12% of their annual revenue because this plant is closing. Now, my niece is a school teacher. She probably never gets up thinking about how does economic development help her. Y'all, when you lose 12% of your school system, that is buses. That is facilities. That is sports teams. That's all that. When you lose 20% of your county's revenue, which a parish is a county, that is jails, roads, bridges, so on and so forth. That's why this stuff matters. When I hear people say economic development doesn't matter, and I've had people say that to me before, it is obvious to me that they don't really grasp how much business pay in taxes. And the fact, the reason it matters is not just for the jobs. It's easy to get caught up in that. And that's what the public wants to do. The reason this matters is so your elected officials have enough revenue to do the various different things that they want to do. So why is an economic developer's job so hard? Now you may think, Chad, why didn't you put this in the economic developer section? Because everybody needs to understand how hard it is. You just flat out need to understand how hard it is. Well, there's several reasons. Number one, an economic developer has to marry the public and private sectors. That is the hardest thing in America to do. I don't care if you're Barack Obama, private sector didn't like him. Donald Trump, public sector didn't like him. Joe Biden, private sector don't like him. I don't care who you are. It is nearly impossible to marry the public and private sectors. And that's the economic developer's primary job. So the board and the elected officials need to understand how hard it is. It is not easy to do. The president can't do it. Second reason it's so hard, an economic developer's got to know a little about everything. Don't think they just got to understand finance. No, no, no. They have got to know a little bit about the water and the sewer and the gas. They got to know about your crime rates. They got to know about your school systems, all about it. They got to even know things about the weather and earthquake zones and building permits and construction costs, all this kind of. Then they got to know taxes, legislation, workforce training, so on and so forth. I haven't got to all of it. They got to know a little bit about engineering, even though they're not an engineer. They've got to know a little bit about everything. That's why it's so hard, how much stuff they have to know. Most economic development organizations turn over their chairman every year. I think it's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Some of them keep them every 2 years. I look at Berkshire Hathaway. I guess that is the best example of a private company in the United States. They've had one chairman for 30-something years. Now, I'm not saying you need to keep one for 30 years, but if you turn it over every year, it's always going to be a new focus in that. So these people, the economic developer, they can have everything going totally well. Then new chairman, whole new ideas come in. I think it's a bad idea, but it is what it is. These are all the people a good economic developer has to deal with on a daily basis. In other words, any of these people call them, they got to answer the phone on any given day. This is another reason why it's so hard. Their own board members, funding partners, their staff, city and county commissioners, state economic development officials, industrial development authorities. Some communities have an industrial development authority. State House and Senate members, the federal delegation staff members, bankers in town, real estate people, industrial and commercial realtors, owners of major pieces of property, engineers, construction companies, local plant managers, they'll call when they have a problem, zoning officials, educational directors, not just high school, college, workforce training, city and county engineers, utility directors, city and county attorneys, railroads, ports, so on and so. Any given day, an economic developer's got to deal with all these people. We have done searches in communities where 95% of these people liked the previous person, but 5% didn't like them. They got to run out of town. That's how many people an economic developer has to deal with. And I compare this to playing on a PGA tour. We have done searches before where people will say to us, we want to hire a Nick Saban type coach as our economic developer. And I explained to him, in economic development, it's not the NFL. You don't win every game. You don't win every game. You're not playing one other town today. See, in a football game, you're playing one other town. This is like the PGA Tour. You're playing 160 of them. There's 160 of them teeing up in the U.S. Open, you know, on the first day. You got to beat all of them to win one of these big projects. This is much more like the PGA Tour. If you win the Masters one time, you are set. You don't have to win it 20 times. You're set. If you win the Masters and the U.S. Open both, you're in the Hall of Fame, even if you had one good season. You don't have to win every week. But you will be shocked how many board members have told me we need a Nick Saban around here. That's not how economic development works. Think of it much more so like the PGA Tour. All your parties need to understand that confidentiality matters. I've seen economic developers tell their folks, we got to keep this confidential, and the people don't understand it or think they're not being honest with them. Let me tell you why it matters. Publicly traded companies can literally not reveal their expansion plans to anyone before their shareholders, or they can be considered doing insider trading, violating laws on Wall Street. If you were to tell that a publicly traded company is considering your town before they wanted that out, you literally could be violating laws as far as insider trading is concerned. This is serious, serious business. So that's, to me, the main reason you don't want it to know. Of course, companies don't want their competitors to know what they're doing. So you don't need to be telling it for that. They don't want their current plans to hear it. What if a company's located in Michigan and you're in Ohio, so you're somewhat close, and you're telling people they're looking to come there, even if they're not leaving Michigan, maybe it's just an expansion. It may freak out their employees in Michigan. I heard we're moving to Ohio. Y'all going to stick, you know? This can create problems. They don't want to be bombarded with people before they make a location, and they certainly don't want media scrutiny. But if you're dealing with a publicly traded one, I'm telling you, this is even more important. You can get yourself in trouble when it comes to confidentiality and stock type laws. So this is something that John Longshore, he's one of the up-and-coming consultants, put on his blog about the importance of it. Elected officials, if you're watching this, you're going to at times think that the economic developer is just not being honest with you when he or she says, I have signed the confidentiality agreement, I can't tell you that. It's for your own good. Trust me what I'm telling you. You'd rather not know it because you can absolutely get yourself in big time trouble. So you all need to understand how using tax dollars as incentives makes more tax dollars. Studies have shown that 50% of tax credits go unclaimed. Studies have shown that. In other words, when you read in the paper that Toyota is getting $800 million in tax credits to locate somewhere, they only end up getting $400 million. Now, you don't need to build a program around that. You just need to know this is the truth. Most companies never use all the credits they get. They end up changing CFOs, changing plant managers, changing controllers. They don't fill out the proper papers. They weren't profitable enough to use it, whatever. They end up, studies have shown, usually only using 50%. So all this talk you hear, we're giving too many incentives away, you're usually only giving away half of what you read. These are all the taxes a typical manufacturer pays. Now, this is going to vary based on your location and state and what your specific taxes are. But if you ever wonder, why are we giving away tax dollars to get this company? Why are we giving away a 10-year property tax abatement to get this company? Well, the reason is because they pay all these other taxes. This is the reason. This is the math behind it. So let's just go through it. A typical manufacturer pays real property taxes, machinery property taxes, school taxes, inventory tax. They pay a tax on their electric power. They pay a transportation fuel tax for every truck that comes in and out of there. They pay a state corporate income tax. They'll pay a local corporate income tax or a gross receipts tax to the local government. They'll pay a federal corporate income tax. They pay workers' comp. They pay unemployment insurance. They pay business license fees. In some places, they pay payroll taxes. Plus, their employees pay income taxes when they go about. And this doesn't even count their employees going to Outback and getting a steak and paying that tax. See what I'm saying? The reason that governments give away these incentives is because it makes them so much more money down the road. That's why this is all important. And remember, if you give away a 10-year property tax abatement, maybe for 10 years you're not making this one, you're making all of these. And after 10 years, you're going to make this one. If that plant runs 30 years, you're making all this profit. That's money going to your schools, to your library, to your fire, to your police, to your bridges. That first slide we went over, that's what that's for. So that's how this works. It gets new money into your bucket from outside investors. That's what it does. So really the difference in what I call economic development, economic activity, is getting new money in here. What is money sloshing around in here? Well, this might be if you got a McDonald's on one side of the road and you put a Burger King on the other. Is that really going to get new money in your town? Or is a person simply going to decide, do I want Burger King or McDonald's today? May not get you any new money. Those type endeavors I call economic activity. Yes, it's stuff going on, but it's not getting new money in your bucket. What you want to do is get new money in your bucket from new companies, from outside investment, from tourists coming to town, this, that, and the other. And that's then going to fund your bridges, your roads, your schools, so on and so forth. So here is a sampling of some of the type incentive programs from across America. So if you offer some of these, you may think, boy, we're being real aggressive. Well, everybody else may offer it. This kind of something to what everybody does, just so you know. There's something called tax increment financing that's gotten very popular. What this is you take the amount of property taxes that you're going to pay over 10 years and you get it as an upfront cash incentive. This is a very popular program. Many places will defer your property taxes for 10 years. Some places will give you up to a 6% payroll tax rebate. So every quarter, you get a cash check back from the state for an amount of your payroll. Many locations will give you free land in their industrial park. There's federal programs called New Market Tax Credits for low-income type areas. Most states have a state corporate income tax credit. All states have some kind of workforce training. Many electric companies will give discounts for the first couple of years, and some places will even give cash. So these are some of the incentives offered across America you're going to have to compete with. And if you're saying, why do people give these incentives? Because of the slide I already shared with you. You can't hardly give away enough incentives compared to all the money you're going to make when a new company comes to town based off the taxes they pay. And then there's something called a jobs multiplier. I am not an economist. I'm not smart enough. So if you want to argue with this slide, call the Brookings Institute. That's where I got this from. The average manufacturer that you recruit creates another 2.4 jobs. So if you recruit 100, they're going to create 240, according to this. 60% would be in the local area, 1.8 in the outside area. So these may be firms outside that supply them, machine shops, whatever the case may be. So energy has the biggest bang for the buck. Here you can see what its multiplier effect is, then manufacturing, then services, right down to even food and beverages. Here you can see hospitals have a jobs multiplier effect. So another reason communities give incentives is not only are you getting that company, you're getting the company, you're getting the jobs that are going to come as a multiplier effect off of them. And the last thing you need to understand before we get into specifics of what each role does is what a typical economic development project process looks like. This way, when the economic developer says, yeah, I hadn't heard from that company in a month, or it's been 18 months since we started and they still hadn't landed, you kind of know what to expect and what takes so long, so you can know what to expect in the process. So the first thing that typically happens is a local community will receive a request for information from your state, your power company, or a consultant directly, saying, hey, we've got a company looking in your general area, 50 jobs, we need 50,000 feet, this and that. You usually have 2 weeks to complete that. The consultant will then take your answers and score them. So if you're ever wondering, are you competing with a town next door? Yes, you are. You most certainly are. This is an example of how consultants might score these locations. You may get a score on your business cost. What are your workers' comp rates? What are your lease rates? What is your labor cost projection per hour? What are your property tax rates? You may get a score on your building. Is it exactly what we're looking for? You may get a score on your workforce. Consultants go through and score all these areas based off the answers that come in from those RFIs. So then they can literally see where are the best places for this company to do business. After your sites are scored, typically then the prospect will come visit you. And this is usually 2 to 3 months after you've sent that RFI. It takes that long to get it scored and get everything in place. Usually prospects only visit in its top, say, 10 places, but this is something to know that happens. After visiting the prospect, the town will then, or the consultant will then usually do detailed labor analysis on your area. Labor is more important now than ever. So once they visit, they'll then go back and actually show, looks like this is one for a call center. They'll actually show how many jobs are in that area and what are you going to have to pay to get that labor. This is how important labor is. After that, let's say then they pick the top 3 or 4 sites. Then the consultant literally runs an operating cost pro forma for 10 years on what it's going to cost to operate in that area. Here's the cost of labor. Here's incentives. This community was given a 4% payroll rebate, so the incentives offset the cost of labor. So then a company can actually see which will be the cheapest options to operate in. Now, do companies always choose the teetotal cheapest one? No, they don't. No, they don't. But usually they're going to choose one of the top three. But this shows you how in your community, any tax you have, let's say that your power costs in your town are more expensive than other places. It's going to get picked up. The consultants are going to end up considering that. So you need to think about that from a perspective every time you add new potential expenses to business. And then the consultants will run a risk analysis on your area. They'll determine what's the proximity to unionized plants. Are you being so aggressive you're going to recruit other companies for labor? This, that, and the other. How well can you pull this deal together? They're going to put a risk analysis on you. And then usually after all that, they'll finally select a site. I've seen this take up to 3 years. Because they may be in the middle of a project and lose a contract. They may gain a contract, which pulls where they need to be somewhere else. So it always swaps. I've seen it last up to 3 years. So if you've got a prospect you've been dealing with 2 years, don't feel like that's totally abnormal. It's not. I've seen it last up to 3 years. And most people watching this are in small to mid-sized communities. You may be in a large community, but most of the people who buy our videos are in small to mid-sized communities. And one thing that your elected officials, your board, and your economic developer need to understand is, do companies want to be there? I have actually dealt with some communities who feel like they're so small, nobody wants to be there. So they almost feel like all the efforts are in vain. Well, I want you to know what we learned calling on 400 companies across America and Canada. In my previous background, I called on 400 companies where I had a lead generation firm set me meetings with companies. We'd go to Detroit, Chicago, San Francisco, LA, Toronto. And I actually called on them. And this is what that I really learned. 323 out of 400 told us they wanted to be in a suburb or rural town. So I went into it thinking everybody wants to be a big town. No, 80% of these companies told me they want to be in a small town or a suburb or a mid-sized town. That's what they told me. So the idea that they don't want to be there is a fallacy. The small to mid-sized town's biggest challenge is you got to get yourself on the map. You just got to make people know where you are. I'm from Mississippi. So the biggest city we have is Jackson. There's like 25 Jacksons in the United States. How do you even stand out amongst the other Jacksons? That's your biggest challenge. But there are companies that want to be there. The companies that we typically called on had 100 million to 500 million in revenue, 2 to 3 locations, and 50 to 500 employees. These people want to be in towns like most of you have that are watching this. So don't feel like your efforts are in vain. You absolutely can do this. So Last thing, then we're going to get into the individual tasks. Whose job is it to do business retention and expansion? Everybody's. It's everybody's. The economic developer needs to constantly be caught on the businesses, understand what's going on, but they can't do anything if the elected officials won't help them. What if a business, you know, needs some sort of a road in order to help them? What if they need a new turning lane? That's going to flow to the elected officials. Your economic development board members usually are people in town who are in the know, well-connected. Y'all have a role to play in terms of intelligence, knowing what's going on, telling your economic developer, hey, go see so-and-so. They're about ready to expand. It's everybody's priority to do business retention and expansion. So now let's get into what each different entity ought to do to best make this work. And let's start with elected officials. So what can elected officials do to drive economic development? Well, the first thing you need to understand as elected official is people talk or other development type permits. Businesses would rather be able to get online and see videos of how to fill out this paperwork. So the more you can be in the technology with this, the better, the more you can have a customer service attitude with online workbooks and all, the better you'll be. So when it comes to your people, your city or county manager need to have a customer service face or not need to have a customer service attitude when it comes to businesses, your building inspection, planning, zoning, utilities, and sometimes even have a concierge that'll go between different departments. Having this customer service attitude amongst your staff will get the businesses talking and you'll get known as a business friendly town. What else can elected officials do? You need to make sure you always have sound infrastructure in place and always grow your infrastructure. As a rule of thumb, wastewater is the most expensive. So anytime you can grow your wastewater system, do that. You need to be applying for every grant that comes along to grow your wastewater system. Every grant that comes along, apply for it. Same with water, internet, electric, and gas, but especially wastewater. Be constantly on the front end of that. Always look for ways to grow your infrastructure. If you can keep growing your infrastructure, chances are your town will grow. And you need to have a good idea on your prices and how you compare to towns close by. I have seen neighboring towns have wildly different prices in water and wastewater. You need to know that. If you're too high, you might need a long-term plan of getting that price down, but you need to know it. But always try to grow your infrastructure. This is the elected official's job. Grow your infrastructure. This is an idea of what we call industrial grade infrastructure. So when it comes to wastewater and sewer, a 10-inch line, having a 10-inch line is considered industrial grade. Water would be a 12-inch line with 500,000 gallons in a water tank. Surface water is preferred. What does this mean? Well, these are lakes or streams, reservoirs, rivers, not having to drill down. When you drill down, you pick up iron, and that can affect some industries. Processes. So you'd rather have surface water. If you don't have it, then you got to drill, but just so you know, having 10 megawatts of excess capacity in your industrial park is considered good. Redundant internet, gas is 4 to 6 inch high pressure gas line. So anytime you get a chance to increase your infrastructure, you do it. That's one of your primary jobs as an elected official. Now, I have seen some towns, when they get a new industry wanting to come, they'll tell them, we'll give you free land if you go to the back of the industrial park. Why is this? They can then apply for a grant to run the infrastructure all the way to the back. That's why that is. So always be thinking about this. How can I get money in here from grants or whoever to grow our infrastructure? And once a year, you probably ought to sit with all your utility heads and your economic developers and just talk about what can we do to grow our infrastructure next year. This is an example of road infrastructure that I want to tell you about. So we had a client in Minden, Louisiana, which is up near Shreveport, that started out making little telephone boxes, those little green boxes you'll see on the side of the road, ended up getting a contract with Google to make these huge data centers. Had to employ a whole lot more people, but these data centers were way bigger. Wasn't anybody's fault. It wasn't the county's fault. It wasn't the state's fault. But to get these data centers out of the plant to the main road, they had to go over a bridge that wouldn't support them. So for them to go west to get on the interstate, they were having to go 80 or something miles north and east and circle around, was killing them on their transportation fuel costs. That was nobody's fault. That wasn't the county's fault. Wasn't the city. It just happened. It was a good thing, but it happened. So the state had to go in and literally lower a road to get under a bridge so these folks could go west. So this is just an example of how you need to be growing your infrastructure. And it doesn't mean you've done something wrong. You've just got to constantly stay on it. Studies have shown that a 10% increase in the length of highway infrastructure will cause a weight increase in your town of 5% in exports. Why does this matter? The heavier stuff your people manufacture, the higher paying the jobs are, as a general rule. So if you can increase your bridges, your roads, your transportation, your industry is going to naturally build heavier stuff because they can, because they're entrepreneurial. They're going to hire more people. They're going to pay them more. So this is how road infrastructure typically grows jobs. You really need to understand as elected officials how you get your revenue and build strategies to recruit companies to generate that so you can fund other stuff. I've seen towns get most of their money from property tax. I've seen other ones get it from payroll tax, other ones from sales tax, other ones from inventory tax. Without knowing your situation, I can't advise you. But if you get all your money from payroll tax, you may want a 1,000 job call center, even if they're minimum wage jobs. Think how much money that's going to get you. If you get all your money from property tax, you may want a big heavy industry. See what I'm saying? If you get all your money from inventory tax, you may want a distribution center. If I were elected officials, I'd want to know my budget. How do I get my money? And once I understood that, work with your economic developer to build strategies to bring more of that in so that you can go out and grow your revenue. You need to be very proactive in creating incentive districts because your competitors are. Right now, a lot of communities are creating what they call tax increment financing districts. This is where future taxes can be paid upfront as an incentive that you can do it in a way that's no risk to the city. Talk to your lawyers. So you can use this to spur downtown redevelopment, hotel redevelopment, housing, even industrial parks. You want to be always proactive in creating these districts. That's going to give you tools in your toolbox so your economic developer can go recruit some things. You want to create a pipeline of talent in your community. And I think this is the elected official's role. What do I mean? Well, you want to figure out how can we keep talent coming here, even if you don't have a college. I know of a rural town that pays for all their kids to go to technical college by using a water bill roundup. So every month, instead of paying $22.10, you can round it to 23, and that 90 cents goes in a scholarship fund so that the kids can get a scholarship. As part of that, the kids then agree to do something in the town for community service. So whether you want to build your own college, I know of towns that did that. Two towns I lived in have built colleges. They built the building and leased it to the university to put programs there. Whatever you do, you want to create a pipeline of talent into your community from colleges or universities. And you really want to focus on quality of place. Some people call it quality of life, but I have found people have different things they want. I was raised Baptist. My mom and dad don't like to drink. I live in downtown New Orleans. I'll have a drink. So we don't have the same needs when it comes to quality of life. So I like to call it quality of place. What are those things? Public education. The more you can do for public education, the more economic development success you have. The more you can do to reduce crime, health care, health and wellness, housing, your environment, aesthetics, and public transportation. Elected officials needs to be focused on these things, and you will then grow jobs because you've created the proper environment. And you need to make sure your economic development is adequately funded. I was in a town where a city council member was saying they were giving too much to economic development. I think they were putting in $200,000. And I said, how much y'all put in your jail? It was like $20 million. It's like 1%. Compare that. Maybe we need to spend more money on economic development. So now let's transition into what economic development board members can do. So that's the elected official's job. Now let's get into what are the jobs of the economic development board members. Well, your primary job is to ensure adequate funding. Yes, the city or county may put in, but chances are you're also getting money elsewhere. This is your primary job. Be that membership or fundraising, making sure you get your governmental appropriations. I believe board members themselves should be investors. We've done this in communities where the board member was appointed and they never put a dime in the organization. They didn't care. They didn't have buy-in. I think the board member themselves should be investors. But your number one job is to make sure you're getting adequate funding. Now, if your biggest donor says, I'm not giving you money this year because I hate you, economic developer, then maybe you need to fire the economic developer. But your job is to make sure the thing is properly funded or you don't need to serve on the board. You need to build a strategy with both long-term goals and short-term goals. You need to know where you're going in the long-term and what's our short-term. Maybe our long-term goal is we want to create jobs so more of our college-educated kids can come back home. Well, that's not going to happen tomorrow. Maybe your short-term goal is we've got to develop an industrial park with good infrastructure. We're never going to land nothing. You as an economic development board need to build that strategy. Why you? Your economic developer is going to come and go. They change jobs all the time. Your mayor, your elected officials are going to lose. They're not going to keep running. You, as the steady person, maybe in that community for 30 years in some role, you need to build a long-term strategy with the buy-in of everybody else. But you need to do that so that you're always moving in the right direction. You need to be the one that understands the difference in economic development, economic activity, so you can defend your staff's efforts. Many times I've seen a new mayor elected, and the mayor will come in and they'll want the economic developer. Why aren't you talking to, you know, Chick-fil-A or whatever? Not really understanding the difference. Instead of making your economic developer sit there and get in an argument, you as a board member understand the true difference. If you don't understand it, go back a few slides to where we talked about the bucket, getting the new water in. You need to be the one. So you can tell the mayor, look, we don't really chase the Chick-fil-A. They don't get new money here. This is what we chase to get new money in our town. You need to help the economic developer build a sales team. An economic developer cannot be the only salesperson. Plus, the prospects know it's their job to sell. But a terrible mistake that some economic developers make, they just put their chairman on there because they're their chairman. They just put the city engineer on there because they're the city engineer, the mayor because they're the mayor, and none of them can sell. You need to help your economic developer figure out, all right, who in our town can sell? Who's our best person to sell the water department? It may not be the head of the water. It may be one of the board members. It may be the engineer. Who knows? Who's our best person to sell our industrial park's buildability? Who's our best person to sell the workforce? That may be an existing HR manager. It might not be the college. You need to help them figure that out because certain people will want to be on that team. The mayor may always want to meet with the prospect, and the mayor may be the world's worst salesman. You need to help your economic developer tell that mayor we'll bring you in when need be. You need to figure out who the best salesperson is and defend them. You need to defend the economic developer from purely political attacks. I see this happen all the time. Is the board's job to defend them if you feel they're doing a good job? If not, you might want to make a change. But if they're doing a good job, following the strategy, you need to be the one to defend them because usually the economic development board members are high enough in town. You may contribute to certain elected officials' campaigns. You need to be the one defending them from political attacks, and you need to hire and fire the economic developer. You need to pay a good enough salary to hire the talent you need to get the job done. And I can't tell you how much that is till I know your goals. Pay enough to hire good talent. And then you need to determine realistic expectations and conduct performance reviews every year. That's the Economic Development Board's job. Ensure the elected officials are participating in product development. The elected official's job is infrastructure, industrial parks, all that kind of stuff. Making sure you got a workforce. You need to make sure they're participating in it. Don't set your economic developer up to go get an argument where he or she's telling the mayor, y'all got to buy more land or else, you know, whatever. You be the one to do it. Mayor, if we're going to land two more deals, we're running out of land. We got to find some land. That's the economic development board's member job to do. And you need to make sure your business community is as invested as possible in the public schools. The public school pitches that work best are when the superintendent or whoever comes in and meets with the prospect and says, we're tied in with our business community. Our business community told us they needed this or that or the other, and this is what we did. As a board member, that's not really the economic developer's job. You need to make sure that your businesses and your public schools are on the same page somehow or another. However you got to do it, you need to do that. And you have to have financial oversight and make sure an audit is conducted. And we'll talk more about that in a minute. When it comes to what can the economic development staff do? So we went over elected officials. We went over the board. Now, what is the economic developer's job and his or her staff. Well, priority number one is to create an inventory of everything you have that might interest a company. And you got to constantly update this because it changes. Every day it changes. You got to have an inventory of your industrial buildings, your labor. How many of this type worker we got? How many of that? Your industrial sites where you can build buildings. Your existing industries and support companies. How many machine shops, tool and die shops, trucking companies, temporary labor? What incentives do we have that are different, and what utility capacity inventory do we have? You got to constantly update this all the time. It's a full-time job because it's going to change on you. The second priority is you want to build your value proposition based on existing industry, and you want to build a sales team around that. What does that mean? This is how your value proposition ought to read. This is going to change for every town. And this is going to change based on what you, but this is how it ought to read. And it's your job to build. Your company should come to our town because we have XYZ critical mass of existing industries. Point number one, you don't want to sound desperate. Please come here. We don't have nothing. No, you ought to come here because these three companies already came here and they're highly profitable. They love it. They done hired more people. They like it so much. Point one. Point two, we have a building, or we'll have a built-to-suit building for you that you can get at a cheaper real estate than elsewhere. So come here because these companies already proved we're a great place to do business, and we got a real estate option for you. Come here because we have a plan to help you recruit, screen, and train labor. When you come here and you need to hire these 100 people, this is how we're going to help you recruit them, screen them, and train them. Come here because we have these utility advantages. We have more water than our competitors. We have a cheaper power, whatever the case. Come here because we have these incentives to help you up front. Maybe it's cheap land. And we have these 10-year tax incentive to help you over the long term. You want to build a value proposition. And this is always your formula. This is always going to be your formula. But it's your job to build it and figure out what all goes in. The third part of the economic developer is to build a sales team. This is where your board needs to help defend you against people that don't belong on your sales team. But typically, your best sales team is going to have some existing industry person who can sell your community and say, this is a great place to do business. It works for us. Best I've seen at this is an HR manager that's been an HR manager in different locations that can honestly say we have an easier time hiring people here than other places. That's sales. You want somebody to sell your labor. Recruit, screen, and train. You want somebody to sell your utilities, engineer to sell the buildability, what it's going to cost to build this plant, and a salesperson from your elected officials, and find people who connect with people. Don't just put so-and-so on. Some of the worst salespeople I ever seen were city engineers. They're just not trained to sell. You may want a salesperson out of your biggest engineering firm in town. Your job is to figure out who can do these different things. Your fourth priority is to build different incentives than your competitors. Don't offer the very same incentives as the town next door. Don't just say the state's going to do that. You want to come up with different incentives, whether they're real estate or cash. Most companies lose money the first 2 years in operation. I don't care if they're a big Fortune 100 company or a startup. They lose money right at first. They got to hire people and train them. They got to work out their supply chain. They have machinery issues. So a lot of times the incentives that win are what helps lower upfront cost, cheaper power the first year, free land, whatever the case. You need different incentives than your competitors so you have a story to tell. Your fifth priority is to build a labor pitch around recruiting, screening, and training. Now, this goes in your story, but this is a pitch. When it comes to workforce training, we've seen towns make a mistake. I have seen towns bring in 17 different people to talk about workforce training. They'll have somebody in there from the workforce board, from the community college, from the union, from the state, from all these different places. And it all ends up being alphabet soup. You can't keep it straight. You got to convince a company you can recruit people for, however you're going to do it. You can screen them and you can train them. That's how you got to do it. And whatever programs you have, no matter what the acronyms are, turn it around and put it into a story about recruiting, screening, and training. And you'll have success. Your sixth priority is to build marketing infrastructure. You got to tell the world about yourself. Website, maps, buildings and sites, slideshows. This is not the board's business. I have seen economic developers say, well, I got to get my board to approve the colors of my website. Mistake. It's not their job. It's your job. Now, if you're not getting any prospects, then get rid of you. Your job to oversee the marketing. These are inbound and outbound marketing ideas that I would pursue if I were you. So inbound ideas are where you put out information and prospects come to you. Outbound means you go to them. So what are some good inbound ideas? If you can get testimonial videos from your existing industries or HR managers and blast those things out on LinkedIn, let them tell your story. That will get prospects to call you. Case studies, calculators, slide decks, doing podcasts, putting content out so people call you. That's one way to do marketing. When it comes to outbound marketing, the best success I've seen economic developers have are when you go to trade shows with some of your most successful companies. So instead of you just going to the air show or the automotive show and getting a booth, go with one of your suppliers already in town. Go with a company already in town. Tell them you'll help pay half of it or you'll buy a dinner or something. Now you're in their booth. You've got instant credibility with other people. So that's how you want to do that. You can pay lead generation firms to set you meetings. You can email market and you can even cold call various different companies. Your seventh priority is to answer RFIs to impress state, utility, and site selector partners. Every time you get an RFI from a state or a utility or site selector, every single time you get one, you very well may not win that deal, but you have a chance to impress somebody and they'll bring you another one. How do you impress them? You answer every question with your value proposition that you've already built. We have these industries here. You ought to come. We got this real estate option for you. This is how we can handle your labor. These are our utility advantages. This is how we're going to give you incentives to lower your cost. Work that into every question. When a question is, how many acres are in your industrial park? Work in. Instead of just saying 100, say, there are 50 acres adjacent to XYZ industry, and we'll give it to you for half off. Work these answers in. You're going to impress people. They'll bring you future deals. And then we'll end with finances and personnel. So you want to remember, this is the board's job. Now, the elected officials are out of this unless you work for them, unless they're your board. This is the board and the staff's job, and there are some crossover. It's the board's job to make policy. It's the staff's job to implement it. See what I'm saying? So this is the board's job, define the mission, corporate governance, strategic collaboration, employ the director, long-term budget and legal and regulatory. It's the staff's job to employ everybody but the director. Your CEO or director needs to employ the people that work for them. We'll get into that. The staff runs the programs, not the board. The staff does the financial reporting. The staff makes sure you're collaborating, day-to-day budgeting and administration. And you all share in strategic planning, performance evaluation, fundraising, and friends raising. When it comes to tax and legal issues, the staff should immediately notify the board if there's any payroll or payroll tax or legal problems. The board then responds to these notifications and they approve any correspondence in dealing with legal or tax matters. That's not the staff's job, that's the board's job. When it comes to accounting, the staff should complete monthly statements, income statement, balance sheet, within 3 weeks at the end of the month and prepare end-of-year tax statements. The board should choose a treasurer who understands generally accepted accounting principles. They should ask questions to make sure they understand the financials and periodically review individual expenses. Once in a while, the board ought to look at a credit card statement, make sure everything's in order. Staff shouldn't feel guilty about that. This is the board's job. They should do this once in a while. When it comes to cash flow, the board should never let the organization run out of money. If you see that you're in trouble as a staff, you need to develop a plan to bridge that trouble, let the board know. The board needs to ask for funding that's promised that's yet to flow in. Let's say a big donor promised $100,000 in June and it's July and they hadn't gave it yet. The board needs to call them, not the director. The board needs to call them and ask for that money. Staff, if you have a cash flow surplus projected, you need to figure out how to maximize that. When it comes to salaries and personnel, this is very important. The board hires the director, whether your title is director, CEO, whatever. The director hires everybody else. So the board should approve the salary range of each type person. Okay, so let's say that the board approves a salary range for the vice president from 70 to 80,000. Then it's none of the board's business if it's 72, 73, or 74. That is the CEO's job. The CEO needs the flexibility to pay them, raise them, motivate them, not the board. You approve the line item budget for salaries, and then it is up to the director to handle that. You only negotiate the director's salary. You do, as a board, need to improve the benefits for the employees and personnel policies, and the staff needs to make sure they abide by those. When it comes to an audit, the board needs to take the lead in interviewing and selecting the auditor, not the director. You need to meet with the auditor at least once without the staff there. Staff, don't get upset. This is common practice. This is how it should be. And you need to review internal control procedures. The staff needs to make all financial records easy for the auditor to get. You need to prepare a written response and develop internal controls to address weaknesses. If they put in there, you know, you need a different person taking the mail to the bank that opened it, then put in there, we acknowledge this. Here is how we will handle that. And then overall, the staff needs to communicate well with the board, and you need to appreciate sometimes you're going to be asked tough questions. When it comes to the board, you don't just need to be a governor. You need to be a problem solver. You need to be willing to ask tough questions. You need to respect the difficulty of the director's job. Let me talk right here for a second. I used to be an economic developer and I ran a chamber of commerce. I did that for 10 years. I've now owned my own business for 7 years at recording of this. According to when you watch it, I may have owned it longer than that. I will tell you, owning my business is 4 to 5 times easier than running an economic development or chamber. That's honest to God's truth. I have seen entrepreneurs that'll say things like, oh, anybody run that chamber. I run my own business. It's, you know, anybody do that? No, they can't. I'm telling y'all, it's harder. I did them both. Running my business is way easier. So you just need to respect how hard that job is. You only need to make reasonable requests for ad hoc reports. Don't walk in your economic developer's office and demand a list of all the projects right now. They may be in the middle of an RFI. Make reasonable requests and treat the financials very, very seriously. So as we end, remember, it's the board's job to make the policy. It's the staff's job to do the implementation. And how we started, we'll end with this. The best teams I've seen, the economic developers, the quarterback, the wide receiver, the skill positions, the board, the elected officials, the offensive line, you block for them. You block for them. Doesn't make you less important. You're probably more important. But at the ribbon cutting, the elected officials get to come to the front. I hope you'll follow us. If you enjoyed this video, you can buy many other ones along these lines based on what we're putting out at the time on nextmoveondemand.com. We have a podcast show. You can find us, the Next Move Group, We Are Jobs podcast on Apple, Spotify, all those places, and a YouTube channel. So you can follow us there. TheNextMoveGroup.com or call us at 1-800-764-3105. Thank you so much.